fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.co.
We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, we're doing a roundtable of sorts. It should be a very fun and interesting edition of Federalist Radio Hour. We're in the middle of a midterm cycle, and there are major trends, as we've covered on this podcast, and as has been an interesting focus, I think, increasingly of national media coverage, the shifts in the Hispanic vote, whether it's in Texas or Florida or elsewhere in the country. We've assembled a panel of sorts to dive into what could be happening this fall, what could be happening in some primary races, and whether or not these trends are durable. So I'm joined by three guests. I'm going to welcome them one by one, and I'll start with you, Cassie Garcia. You are running in a big race that would be Texas's 28th congressional district, where Henry Cuellar is the representative, has been there for years and years and years, is one of the more centrist Democrats, although obviously that's an interesting label for him, because Democrats have shifted so far left that to be called the centrist Democrat I don't know how much it actually says anymore. So Cassie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Emily. I'm honored to be here, and I can't wait to retire Henry Cuellar this fall.
Oh, man. Well, and we have another candidate on the show with us. We have Carolina Amesti. You're running for Florida's House of Representatives in a very interesting district. That would be District 45, which includes the one and only Walt Disney World. Thank you so much for joining us, Carolina.
Thank you, Emily. It's a blessing to be here.
Of course. And we are joined also by Abraham Enriquez, who is the president of Bienvenidos, a group that works on Hispanic issues. Abraham, thank you so much for joining us. And what can you tell us about Bienvenidos just as we kick off here?
Thank you so much, Emily, for the invitation. Also a big fan of Federalist, and even bigger fan of Cassie and Carolina. And as an organization, Bienvenido, we've been at the forefront of exposing conservative policy and candidates to the Hispanic community, primarily in the states of like Texas, Arizona, Georgia, and Florida. So we kind of knew from very early on that districts like Cassie's and Caroline's were going to eagerly be flipping to conservative candidates. And after some recent polling shows, kind of our predictions were correct. And so as an organization, we're just here to continue to expand that conversation of the importance of conservative leadership and conservative policy and how that uplifts the Hispanic community in America.
Well, and I'll start with you again, Abraham, just as we go around the horn here before we get to Carolina and Cassie. Can you just set the table for us here on what trends in particular folks should be looking at? Obviously, there's been a lot of hay made about what happened in the Rio Grande Valley in the presidential election in 2020, and then Myra Flores's big win down there earlier this summer has been huge news, because we've seen Republican turnout increase in a lot of those border districts and border counties. And that has to do certainly with changes in Hispanic voting patterns. In these particular areas, we're talking about Mexican immigrants and their families, their descendants, their children, their grandchildren, etc. But I know that that's, you know, different, you know, whether you're talking about Cubans in South Florida, whether you're talking about Venezuelan immigrants, there are different things to be looking at, of course, here. So as we're just sort of trying to take this 30,000 foot view of shifts in Hispanic voting trends over the last few years, what should people know?
Yeah, well, I think when you look at what Myra Flores did back in June, I think it's going to foreshadow what's really going to happen, not only down in South Texas, but really in a lot of these pocket areas where a lot of Latinos are kind of fed up with progressive leadership and progressive policies that are devastating the community. I mean, Myra Flores would triple the GOP voter turnout in her primaries and then flat out won her special election. Kind of avoiding a runoff, which is really unheard of down in South Texas. But, you know, what Bienvenido's seeing across the country really is consistent with what the polling is showing. And according to Civics, which, by the way, is a Democrat polling firm, Biden's approval ratings right now with Hispanics is just about 42% nationally. And that includes Latinos in heavily Democrat states like New York and like California, right? So when you look at places like Florida and Texas, which is where Cassie and Carolina are running, you really see troubling signs for Democrats. You know, Biden's approval ratings with Hispanics out there in Florida is just about 39%. That bodes very well for Governor DeSantis in his reelection and for candidates like Carolina. And in Texas, where Hispanics have historically voted Democrat, we're talking about that Rio Grande Valley, Bexar County, San Antonio, Central Houston, Biden's about 33% with Hispanics. And it's also worth noting that among the 10 counties with the biggest swings from left to right in 2020, all of them were Hispanic, and 9 out of 10 of them were in Texas. And Democrats are also having serious problems with Hispanics in places like Georgia and Virginia. And in fact, we see that with Glenn Youngkin winning about 55% of the Hispanic vote. And according to exit polls, I mean, the shift is going to help candidates like Yesley Vega this fall. So we're really excited about, you know, Yesley out in Virginia. So all that said, you know, when the election and polling data shows is that Democrats have a very serious problem with Hispanics nationally and in key battleground states. And I also think it's really important to emphasize that it takes candidates, Latinas like Cassie, like Caroline, like Yesley, like Myra, to go out and really show their community that they have another option this election cycle. For the first time, they have great representation. And that's really exciting voters. I mean, we just spent a week long down in the Rio Grande Valley where a lot of Democrats who are still registered Democrats say, we are really excited that for the first time, we have someone that is motivating us to go vote Republican. So I'm excited to see that trend really expand on a macro level come midterm elections.
Yeah, and I will have more questions for you, Abraham, on that exact dynamic later in the episode. And maybe Carolina and Cassie have thoughts on it as well, whether we are seeing people who have voted Democrat or people who have never really voted before Hispanics come out and pull the lever for Republicans, I think is a fascinating dynamic. Now, Carolina, your district is a very interesting one. Your primary is on August 23rd. We don't really have a dog in that fight here at the Federalist, but you are running in a key district and you have run a really interesting race. You've talked about socialism versus free markets. You've talked about all of these, and especially in this economy, issues that you can sort of see meaning a lot and tapping into something very serious with Hispanics in Florida. So what is it about, you know, socialism and tying that to Democrats today in the state of Florida, in the country more broadly? One, what do voters look at? You know, when you use that label, some people might say, oh my gosh, you know, this is hyperbole, et cetera, et cetera. What makes that real for the voters that you're trying to appeal to when you, you know, use a campaign that messages so heavily that, you know, the Democratic Party is one that's heading in that direction?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, we can see it now with, you know, the Biden administration. They're just creating more government. They just employed about 80,000 more IRS officers. So we've seen that most of the Hispanic community, they come from other countries like Venezuela, Cuba, even Colombia. So they've lived corruption. They've lived socialism, the causes of socialist policies and what it does to our families. So now we're just, now that we're in America, you know, my parents came here many years ago. fleeing from socialism. And we're seeing here in America that the Democrats are following the same playbook. It's the same trend. They're trying to take our Second Amendment rights. They're trying to create more government. I mean, this policy aspect of them, just creating more government, more people to really just get in our lives and tell us what we have to do and what we can't do or what we should do, is just a matter of socialism. Here in Central Florida, the fact that you have people that are trying to pass these progressives, woke ideology to indoctrinate our kids from kindergarten to third grade is just astonishing. It's really affecting our community. And our governor has been an amazing ally to the conservative movement, saying, you know what, we cannot accept the indoctrination to our kids. I mean, it's just common sense. And the Democrats are losing the common sense. And they have this approach of really creating radical policies that are the playbook of socialism. That's what they want to do. They want our country to be a socialist country. And the Hispanic community knows that. We stand for faith, family, and freedom. And that's the opposite of the Democrats.
Hmm. Yeah. And Cassie, I imagine a lot of those same sort of dynamics apply in your race. And you're, of course, down in a district that borders Mexico in Texas, and a very key race. Democrats are eager to see what happens with Cuellar. But Cassie, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you worked for Senator Cruz. I know you had an appointment with the White House. Why did you decide that you wanted to basically get into the miserable business of working in Congress?
Oh, I'm so blessed to live the American dream and the opportunities to serve Texas and within the administration. I saw firsthand and seeing what's happening on our border and the failed policies from this administration. I decided to not sit on the sidelines and complain, but to get in and jump into this fight. And that's why I'm running for Congress. You know, I'm a proud third generation Texan. And you're right. This area has voted Democrat for decades. You know, this district alone in 28 has been Democrat controlled for 110 years. But I think what's happened is that the Democrats have gone from being a party of union halls to a party of woke faculty lounges. And every day I meet Hispanics who tell me, Cassie, I've been a Democrat my entire life, but this is no longer my Buelos Democratic Party. And they're right, it's not. And just today we saw Henry Cuellar, who pretends to be a moderate, vote to stick 87,000 new IRS agents on Americans. And Hispanics have led the nation in new small businesses. So this will disproportionately hurt our community. And I'm in the fight because we are seeing the worst border crisis we've ever seen. And my husband is a brave Border Patrol agent, has served this great country for 26 years, and he's never seen the border a mess. And I'm in this fight, and people are waking up. You know, I am running for Congress to defend faith, family, and freedom.
Hmm. Yeah, I was actually recently in the Rio Grande Valley doing some border reporting, and a mess is very much the accurate description, sadly. Cassie, I'm going to start with you again in just reverse order here as we go down the line. I'm really curious, and I'll pose this next question to everyone, the same question. Is the Hispanic vote, what is the sort of breakdown of culture versus economy in influencing the Hispanic vote? I imagine that it's not very black and white. It's sort of a combination of all of these things. The socialism question is a really good one, because I think a lot of people understand socialism to be sort of a purely economic complaint or a purely economic concern. But when, you know, you talk about encroaching socialism, I imagine, especially to people whose families have fled socialist, communist dictatorships, they hear that as just also big government, whether it's surveillance like what we see in Cuba, you know, free speech curtailment like what we see in Cuba as well, in Venezuela. It is not purely about sort of price controls and, you know, Maduro, all of these things, right? Like it's also about the culture of freedom. And so I guess I'll having said that, Cassie, I'll turn it back to you, then I'll go to Carolina and Abraham. What is it about? Is it the Biden economy alone, or are there other sort of cultural concerns, looking at what happens in schools, looking at what happens with sort of radical leftist ideas, anti-Christian ideas, anti-American ideas? What's the interplay between these economic and cultural questions when it comes to shifting the Hispanic vote?
Well, that's a great question, Emily. So it's both economic and cultural. You know, I'm one out of four in my family, and I know how hard it is to raise kids in this economy. And I've seen how hard families work in my community to put food on the table. So when Democrats pretend that we're not in a recession, they're incredibly out of touch. And they're also out of touch with our cultural values. You know, most Hispanics believe in God, family, and country. And we're deeply patriotic and we value our tradition. So I'm extremely proud of my heritage. You know, I grew up listening to artists like Selena and Luis Miguel, but no one's going to tell ourselves, you know, when they call ourselves Latinx and radically change the Spanish language, that's just absolutely absurd. But the Democrats don't get it. And that's why every few years they have to rely on celebrities to tell us how to vote. But no one in our community cares what celebrities think in politics. You know, we care about the economy, we care about safe borders, and we care about our children's schools. And that's why this November, Washington, D.C. Democrats like Henry Cuellar are going to be in for a big surprise.
What about you, Carolina? What do you think about that question?
Most definitely. I agree with Cassie. It's just astonishing how the Democrats are trying to create more control, more government. And whether we're Hispanics or, white American, we all care about economy, crime, inflation. And, you know, my parents coming from Venezuela, I remember that the first thing that Chavez did when he got into power is he pretty much created this indoctrination form of education where he started the Universidad Bolivariana, the universities, the Bolivarian universities in Venezuela. And what he did was he controlled the narrative on education. He wanted to indoctrinate the students at these universities with his ideology of socialism, of, you know, the Venezuelan people need to live off the government. This just this woke ideology. And that's what the Democrats are doing. They want to indoctrinate our kids with critical race theory. They want to tell white Americans that you guys are bad, that you Hispanics, you're a victim. African-Americans, you are a victim. And we're not victims. This is the best country in the world. This is the country that really provides an opportunity, the American dream. My parents are a witness of the American dream. I'm a businesswoman. I'm an educator. And thank God that my parents came to America, the legal realm, and now I can live and be part of the American dream. So it's very astonishing that the Democrats are just trying to create this woke ideology in our classrooms. And that is one of the branches of socialism. It's control, it's lack of freedom. And we're seeing it here in Central Florida. We're even seeing woke CEOs trying to follow that agenda and trying to indoctrinate our little ones. And the conservative movement, we really have to stand up and defend our children, defend our education, and most importantly, defend the American dream and preserve our country. It's the greatest country on earth. We just have to preserve it. And that's why I believe that the Hispanic vote is going to be essential. It's going to be very important in November, and we're going to obtain the victory, God willing.
Abraham, I want to add a layer to the question, which is that I remember when at the Federalist, we were doing some reporting out in Loudoun County, Virginia, when parents were mobilizing there to take back their school system from, you know, this sort of radical left cultural ideological agenda. And a lot of the people we talked to were immigrants or the children of immigrants. And part of what was just deeply offensive to them about the curriculum was anti-Americanism. How does that play into this question of culture versus economics and kind of all of the above?
I think it's incredibly important, Emily. Look, Biden, his campaign was he's going to build back better. He needs to fix America. There's so many things that you should hate about America. And that doesn't, I mean, there's a reason why he didn't do too well as what he thought he was going to do with the Hispanic vote, because Latinos, you know, familia y patria, right? Which is family and love of country, is something that's very interwoven with our community and how we view political advocacy as well. We love America. And bienvenido as an organization, our audience is really young Latinos from the ages of 18 to 35. And there's this kind of this congruent message within the community and with our audience is that they feel like their abuelitos or their grandparents, values are no longer being fought for. So they have to step up and fight for the values that their grandparents taught them to love and to fight for in America. So the progressive left has really adopted this messaging of America is a bad country. Latinos need help. And America needs fixing. And that just doesn't fly with Latino voters. We understand that America is a land of opportunity. People flee their countries to have a fighting shot at that, getting that opportunity, entrepreneurship in America. And conservatives and Republicans have done a really good job of embracing that message. And, you know, there's a tendency in the past, you know, we have political analysts and advisors go on mainstream media and counsel policymakers and lawmakers and saying that Hispanics only care about immigration. But, you know, even liberal groups like Unido US, which was formerly known as the National Council of La Raza, you know, they are even now acknowledging that our community cares about a wide range of issues that are similar to those of any other American, meaning that Unidos, you know, they also understand that immigration isn't going to be the winning factor, or sticking just to immigration is going to be the factor to winning the Latino vote. They put out a straw poll, and the number one issue by far for Hispanics is inflation and the rising cost of living. And at number two was crime and violence. And coming in at number three, it was jobs and the economy. Now, I think it's very, very important, because if you combine their number one and number three issues, which are both economic issues, nothing else comes close. And mind you, that is from a left-wing advocacy group. And immigration reform and amnesty came at 12th place among Hispanics in their top priorities. So when you have a party and political leaders who say that America is a bad country, and then on top of that, you have toppling inflation rates, you have economic crisis, what you're really doing is you're pushing the Latino vote out of your party. So I think that that's going to be a pretty you know, congruent message across all America as to why Latinos are no longer embracing Democrat candidates.
Super interesting. And now I'm going to do the same thing where we just reverse the order and go back up. And I'm going to start with you again, Abraham. This is a chicken or egg question for everyone. I guess what I want to get at here is there were shifts happening sort of during the Trump era with the Hispanic vote. And for me, You look at the numbers, you look at the resources that the Republican Party has poured into actually courting Hispanic voters recently. That raises a question of, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the shift in resources or the shift in sort of the voting patterns? What's your take on the breakdown as the Republican Party does a lot more Hispanic outreach? I mean, hearing from Myra Flores about how she sort of saw the lack of Hispanic outreach in her district and decided to kind of take that upon herself and start helping Republicans do that. Was there something about the Trump era that galvanized Hispanic Republicans, that galvanized the Republican Party to start making that outreach happen? What came first in all of this? Or was it just kind of happening at the same time for some reason?
You know, I think it's interesting to kind of talk about how well Trump did with the Latino vote in 2020, because it was something that no one really was expecting. But you look at the economic message that President Trump was saying, and you look at the policies that his administration was really putting out there. I remember being invited to the White House Rose Garden, where I met Cassie Garcia when we were celebrating the Hispanic Prosperity Commission, right? Which was formed, President Trump formed it, to provide economic resources and uplift entrepreneurship, the entrepreneurship message within the Latino community. All of that was never really done before by a Republican administration. And so then you start seeing these shifts within Latinos embracing a candidate. And I think what really happened was the RNC understood, okay, we have amazing candidates like Cassie Garcia, Myra Flores. Let's start opening RNC community centers and start outreaching. And it clicked, right? And it clicked well. So before we say that Latinos are embracing the Republican Party, which I think we can get there, I think it's more so Latinos are awakening and understanding that they just don't have to always be voting Democrat. And I think we're going to be talking about the Latino vote even after the November midterms, because you go down to the Rio Grande Valley and the majority of Latinos who are going to come out and vote in November are still on paper registered Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of down ballot races that they'll still be voting Democrat because of their uncle or their aunt or their grandpa is down ballot. You know, they're running, right? The Rio Grande Valley is a very tight knit community. But on the federal level, they finally have an option, right? They finally have someone that's excited, motivating them to get out and vote, which is people like Cassie Garcia, Myra Flores, Monica La Cruz. So I think what we're seeing is President Trump gave the Latino community a reason to you know, take the blindfold off and realize there's another option besides just voting Democrat all the time. And then you get amazing candidates that the RNC is supporting and putting resources behind, like Cassie and Meyer, Monica and Caroline. And that's just a great equation, right? But also, it's really important that these candidates, like Cassie and Caroline, are also really championing the message of economic prosperity, which is the number one reason why Latinos are coming out and voting Republican. You know, this recession and inflation is very, very hard on all Americans, but especially difficult for Hispanics because the median Hispanic household earns about $55,000 per year, and we tend to have, you know, larger families. So that means that when we have more mouths to feed, but less money to do it with under these failed liberal economic policies, it's forcing Latinos to go out and say, okay, who's going to defend me on the national level, on the federal level? And that's when you have amazing candidates like Cassie and Catalina come out and really adopt those voters into the Republican Party.
Carolyn, I want to toss that question to you again with a layer, and that would be the Disney layer, because I'm curious as to how you would describe the conversations you've had with voters since the so-called "Don't Say Gay" bill controversy between Disney and Governor DeSantis, and actually the legislature as well, which you're running to be a part of. How did folks in your district, which includes Disney, react to this question of removing the basically special privileges that had been assigned to Disney and worked out with Disney, with, you know, the government of the state for years and years? Was that, did you find that to be, or does that seem to be a real motivating issue for people in the direction or in a direction that's favorable to Republicans?
Most definitely. It's quite funny that I was at a coffee shop in the district, and one of the constituents bumped into me. He's like, "Oh my God, you're Carolina, you're running for office." And he says, "Oh, I'm a Trump supporter. I saw that Donald Trump Jr. endorsed you. I love Trump. I'm voting for you." So I said, "Remember that August 23rd is the Republican primary. I need your vote." And he says, "Oh, I'm a Democrat, but I vote Republican." So we're seeing across the state, mainly here in Central Florida, that a lot of Hispanics, yes, they're registered as Democrats because it's a process, you know, change voter registration. Most of them don't know how to do it. It's not a quite easy process right now. And the supervisor of elections just really doesn't educate the voters on how to do that process, right? It's not in their best interest here in Orange County, of course. So we're seeing a lot of Hispanic voters that are registered Democrat, but they're actually voting Republican, and they love President Trump. The fact that they love President Trump speaks highly of, you know, the movement and what President Trump did in 2020 for re-election in 2016 when he was first running for office. And in regards to Disney, you know, it's quite interesting. I always give this thought is, you know, I personally love Disney. I live in the area. It's nothing personal against Disney, but the constituents have said, you know what? I love Disney. They're a business corporation. Their job is to generate employment, theme parks, tourism, economic growth in the region, but don't get involved in politics. And just like any organization, you know, you think about a 501c3 organization that's tax exempt, whether it's a church, a school, you know, you're exempt because you're in the best interest of the community to generate a certain benefit, but you can't get involved in politics. And Disney, as an exempt institution that's there to generate employment and growth and tourism, just don't get involved in politics. And the governor made it very clear. He said, this is not, you know, anything against Disney specifically, but it's the fact that they're getting involved in their politics. And he's also made it very clear that in next session that comes up, we're going to be able to address this a little bit better. And we're going to ensure that we do not increase taxes for our taxpayers, for our community. So it's not going to be a burden, which is one of the concerns that a lot of constituents have. They say, well, I agree that Disney should not get involved in politics, but are my taxes going to increase? And most definitely, as a strong conservative voice, I will never be an advocate for increasing taxes. But we do have to address the issue of, you know, we can't have woke corporations trying to indoctrinate our little ones. And it's funny because the bill has nothing to do with the gay community. All it says is the parents have the right and schools cannot teach anything related to gender K through third grade. So it has nothing to do with the LGBTQ community. The left has renamed the bill to their own thing, but it has nothing to do. It's just parental rights and education. Parents have the maximum authority and the right to know what their children are learning in school. And, you know, it's quite interesting to see all of this happen. And the community has been very positive. They're saying, you know what? We love Disney. We live close to Disney, but don't get involved in our politics.
Mm, that's very interesting. Cassie, let me add to that broader question, kind of chicken or egg resources or kind of Trump culture war type stuff. To you, I'm curious also how the border has played into this, because obviously that's a huge issue in your district, and your opponent, Cuellar, is, again, one of the more centrist Democrats on that question, although his voting record, there are some questions about how he votes when it comes to this issue, but he's much more willing to speak in a way that is, I guess, common sense about the border than a lot of Democrats are, much to their upset, especially in far left circles. But how have changes in migration patterns, we have so many people trying to flood through because of our policies, flood through the Texas border right now, especially in your area, how does that add to this question when Latinos in the Rio Grande Valley are going to decide whether or not, first of all, to vote, and then how to vote in this era when, you know, so many, there's so many more, the parties have shifted in ways that mean their votes or their decisions whether to vote might be shifting too.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think Abraham hit it on, nail on the head too, is talking about how predominantly Democrats, even if you're a conservative Democrat, you voted Democrat your entire life, but now there's more options. And talking about the previous administration and what they've done and what we've seen in the shifts in the Hispanic vote, we have the most secure border under the previous administration, under Trump administration. And you talk to Border Patrol agents on the ground, and they tell you we had a commander in chief who helped to secure our job, who was tough on Mexico. And now what you're seeing is you have an administration who does not have the backing. They do not support the Border Patrol agents on the ground and allowing them to do their job, which is enforce the laws on the books. And so you're seeing outrage, you're seeing this crisis, but the administration is saying, you know what, there is no border crisis. And so talking to people and voters every single day, they're seeing that firsthand. And just like Caroline said, you know, she met a voter on the ground who said, hey, I'm a Democrat, registered Democrat. But we're seeing that every single day. I'm talking to voters and they're telling me, Cassie, I've voted Democrat my whole entire life. I'm going to vote Republican for the first time come this November. Talk about energy policies. Talk about the policies that came from the previous administration. What we're seeing right now on the ground, talking to voters, they are absolutely outraged what's happening. And just like with Myra Florida's special election, we had more people came out that voted Democrat their whole entire life, but they saw Myra, what she stood for, pro-God, pro-family, pro-country. And what we're seeing is that exactly play out right now. The Democrat Party has left the Hispanic community. And we can't sustain what we're seeing every single day. We have 7,000 migrants coming across our border every single day. And you know who's being impacted by that? Everybody in South Texas. Now, every city is a border city. Every state is being impacted. You've got mayors in D.C. and New York who are outraged. How come Governor Abbott is not doing, you know, keeping these migrants here? But at the end of the day, the migrants don't want to stay here. They're moving up north to connect with other family members. But at the end of the day, we need to secure our border. We need to work on, you know, there's immigration reform. You know, we need to secure the border. We need to enforce the laws and the books. And I'll tell you about Henry Cuellar. He has always received the endorsement for the National Border Patrol Council. They did not endorse him in this race, in this cycle. They endorsed me in this cycle because they believe in me. They're tired of him saying all the right things, but has done nothing, absolutely nothing to secure our southern border.
Yeah, it seems like Democrats who want to win some of these swing districts might be frustrated with the actions of national Democrats, because just this week, the Biden administration's changed policies towards the border. That has to be a political gift to you, Cassie. And I'll ask you about that. And then I'm going to go down the line again and ask about the IRA, that big piece of spending legislation that was just passed. It does something things with the Affordable Care Act. It does some things with drug fixing. The vast majority of that money is being appropriated towards so-called clean energy. And it's a big piece of spending in the middle of a, you know, a huge economic downturn, likely a recession. We have people, gas prices are through the roof. This bill is predicted to have a very, very small effect on inflation in terms of either reducing or increasing it. Has really nothing to do with inflation. So is that, along with the border policy just this that was announced just this week, are these sort of political gifts to you right now?
They are. You know, day one, when the Biden administration rescinded the Remain in Mexico policy, halted border wall construction, reinstated catch and release, and now you hear from the administration it's completely done. It's, you know, gone. It's the Remain in Mexico policy. But even while we had the Remain in Mexico policy in Title 42, the administration had already watered that down. So it was really ineffective. And so at the end of the day, you know, we need to just enforce the laws in the books. You know, when people are coming in, they're claiming asylum, we either need to, you know, process. And what we're doing, our agents are processing every single day. But we need to do repatriation flights back to their home countries because we can't sustain this. The Border Patrol agent's job is to enforce, you know, the laws on the books, but the administration is not allowing them to do, and to secure our southern border and to watch the bad elements that are coming into this country, the drugs that are flowing. We look at we have meth and fentanyl coming through our border every single day. We have bailouts. You know, people are dying every single day. The cartels are making billions and billions of dollars. Instead of hiring 87,000 new IRS agents that are going to impact South Texas greatly, we need to add more Border Patrol agents, you know, provide them the technology, the personnel to help them do their jobs every single day. We have a border czar, Kamala Harris, who's done nothing. We have a Secretary Mayorkas who does not have the agents back. We have a commander-in-chief who is not acknowledging what is happening on our southern border. And I'll tell you, Democrat elected officials and sheriffs, they're seeing this firsthand, and they're coming to me and say, wow, we can't even get a phone call with the White House. Under the previous administration, of the Trump administration, we had conversation daily with them about what is happening. And we, you know, even though they're Democrats, but they felt there was more communication with the White House. And you've heard Henry Cuellar saying, you know what, I'm giving up talked with the White House about what's happening on our southern border.
Yeah, Carolina, you know, in the aftermath of Democrats landing on this huge piece of spending, how is that playing in your race? I know you're on a state level, but obviously people are looking to both political parties to do something about inflation, something about the incredible cost of living. What's the reaction been to the way Democrats are handling the economy?
Oh, most definitely. It's impactful. I mean, a lot of people in our community, they're just focused on national level issues. And they're asking me and they're saying, I can't believe the Democrats, all they do is spend money that has nothing to do. I mean, this new Inflation Reduction Act, it has nothing to do. There's no way of really controlling the inflation through that act, just spending more money. They're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine with what's going on abroad, but they're not focused on our border policies. And like Cassie mentioned, every state is a border state at this point. I was actually in Texas 3 weeks ago, and I was interviewing a couple people there with Border Patrol. And I asked them, so where are you going now? And most of them said they were coming to Central Florida, Orlando, Miami, Celebration. So this is a matter of the district on a state house level. It is a concern, and the people are seeing it. They're seeing that the Democrats, all they want to do is destroy our country. They don't care about our national security. They don't care about our border. They don't care about the fentanyl crisis, and they don't care about our economy. They want to raise our taxes, and now they're talking about clean energy and the environment and climate change, when in reality, you know, we have to focus on really bettering our economy and really continuing that perspective of America first. We have to put our country first. And their failed policies are affecting the Democrats, and that is helping us Republicans to be elected, because the people are seeing it. We need more America first Republicans.
So same basic question to you, Abraham, but also adding to it, I guess I'm trying to think about how to describe this in the right way. Adding to it the reality that the Democratic Party has historically done better in most races with Hispanics than Republicans have. That has not always been true in every race, but the historical trends are favorable to Democrats. So basically, how can Democrats keep screwing this up? Or are they going to be able to turn it around? And my next question to everyone is about how Republicans can screw it up. But we'll start with the Democrats, because it does seem as though this huge piece of legislation, recent shifts in the border policy, obviously are not going to help them with the Hispanic vote, where they're already losing ground. How else can they continue to push the Hispanic vote, not just away from Democrats, but also kind of into the arms of Republicans?
Yeah, so, you know, quite honestly, Emily, I don't think that the Democrat Party even cares to win the Latino vote at this point, right? This Inflation Reduction Act does nothing for the Latino community. Adding about 87,000 new IRS agents, which, by the way, will be making it bigger than the State Department, the Border Patrol, the FBI, and the Pentagon combined, right? And then the way they kind of, I guess, excuse themselves for this is they go on national TV and they say, don't worry, if you're making less than 400K, you're not going to be affected by this. And that really is somewhat offensive to Latinos, because what they're trying to say is, don't worry, you're never going to make 400K in America, and our policies are always going to keep you impoverished, right? That's how, as a first generation Latino, I hear that messaging point. But really and truly, you know, when the Biden administration first started, when Joe Biden first got into the White House, he surrounded himself by all of these Latino cabinet members, senior advisors, and kind of really boasted this idea that, like, this is the most pro-Latino White House that there will be, which the mainstream media gave no attention to how many Latinos were serving under the Trump-Pence administration, right? But, you know, you have the first, that really means nothing when you have the first lady going to a Latinx luncheon when we know that less than 2% of Latinos actually identify with the term Latinx. So she goes to a luncheon where the majority of Latinos are not going to feel welcome, right? And then she goes in further and says that we're unique and our strength comes from being bodega workers and taco eaters, right? So what that makes me understand is that even though the Biden White House might have all of these Latinos surrounding the president, they have no seat at the table when it comes to decision making. Why? Because if they truly did, someone would have told the first lady to not attend the Latinx luncheon, and much more, not to call Latinos, well, they got workers and taco eaters, right? But then also maybe advise the president on how some of these policies that are coming out of the White House really negatively affect the Latino community. So at this point, I think Latinos are starting to wake up and have a sophisticated view on how policies really direct their, indirectly or directly affect their lives. And they're starting to see that these Latinos that Biden surrounds himself with really are just placeholders, and he's not there to take them serious. So I think that when you see these lawmakers and progressive leaders and President Biden continue to talk about the Green New Deal and clean energy and gender neutral pronouns and how, we need to have parents not have a say in the way kids are being brought up in the education system, that's not serious when it comes to when you want to adopt Latino voters, right? So I think they have lost the Latino vote by far and large. And I think that's why we're seeing such a strong open border policy shift from this administration, because they know that winning the Latino vote is no longer in their playing field. And so what they would rather do is just have this influx of mass illegal immigration, and then have progressive states like California and New York really push laws to allow these illegal immigrants to vote. And that's how we're going to see the Democrat Party really winning the Latino vote through their open border policies, with this new generation of illegal immigrants wanting to come to the country to vote, right? Which is a very dangerous game to play. But as for the Latinos who are voting in today's day, they lost them. And I don't think there really is a serious game plan to win those Latinos back.
So similar question then, Carolina, I'll start with you, start in the middle and then go around this time for the last question as we wrap. Basically, how can Republicans screw this up? It's interesting to talk to you running in a state-based race because kitchen table issues are so pronounced in those races. And I'm curious then how Republicans who do seem to be running a pretty sharp messaging campaign when it comes to winning Latino voters this cycle, and they seem poised to do perhaps even better with that in the presidential cycle in 2024, depending on how it all shakes out. How can Republicans screw this up? How can Republicans, not make the gains as everything that's happening, you know, that Abraham described, that you described, that Cassie has described with Democrats turning voters off? Republicans then have to win the trust of the voters. They can't just be the alternative. They need to have people affirmatively come out and pull the levers for them. So what should Republicans do to avoid not becoming a home for Hispanic voters going forward?
So it's interesting because a lot of the Hispanic community members, their perspective on the Republic is, oh, they're conservatives, they're pro-family, pro-God. Their only concern has always been immigration. And now that they see the border crisis and the Democrats of how crazy they're really taking into the immigration policies, where they're just allowing anybody come in, no matter from where, who, how, it's an open border policy. Now a lot of Hispanics are opening their eyes and they're saying, you know what? We can't have that because we have our kids here. We have our families here, our national security, who protects us, who cares for us. And then they realize, wait a minute, the Democrats are letting all these illegals come in. But what about job opportunities? What about the right to actually work? So it's crazy because the Democrats let illegals come in, but they don't grant them the right to work. So they work illegally. And then the small business owner or the corporations that hires illegals, they get penalized by the IRS. Currently, right now, any business owner that hires an illegal is penalized by the IRS for hiring someone who does not have a Social Security card or who does not have a work permit in the United States. So it's such a contradiction. They can come in, but how do they survive? How do these people survive, the good ones? And we know there's a lot of bad people coming in with the fentanyl crisis, cartels, but there's also good people. How do they survive? And that's what the Hispanic community is really realizing. They're opening their eyes and they're saying, wait a minute, this doesn't work. We need people to come to America, the legal realm, for them to have a work permit, a Social Security card, for us to know who they are. Why are they here? What type of work permit? So Hispanics are now opening and realizing, and they're understanding the importance of national security and border security. And this really is going to affect the Democrats. I don't see the Republican Party being affected, but actually I see the Democrats continuing this disaster. It's highly affecting them. We're going to see it in the upcoming elections in November, and we're going to see it in 2024. Hispanics, we stand for God, family, and country, and we need to protect our country. This is the American, this is the best country in the world. We have to preserve the American dream.
Cassie, what do you think about that question?
That's a great question. So thankfully, we are seeing great outreach from the RNC's Hispanics. And I think Republicans understand that Hispanics are important members of the GOP coalition, that we ultimately share conservative values in the Hispanic community. We support, you can ask anybody in the district in 28, the community support a strong and secure border. We support legal immigration, not illegal immigration. And so Caroline is absolutely right. Abraham's absolutely right. You know, we need to, make sure that people are coming in the legal way, to pursue the American dream. I'm so blessed to be living the American dream. And I worry about the mothers and parents that are sending their 5-7-year-old to with cartel members, being smuggled in here. I've met many of those children and it breaks my heart every single day. And where, once they get processed and released, you know, these migrants, where are they headed to? Where are they going? You know, how are they going to, be able to support themselves? So we need to, enforce laws in the books, and thank God we have these RNC centers, Hispanic community centers that have opened up. The first one in District 28 in Laredo, Texas. And then we have one in McAllen and San Antonio. They're doing tremendous job, their staff, and going out and reaching it to the Hispanic community. So at the end of the day, we are pro-God, pro-family, pro-country. And the messaging is so important to be able to come this fall, you know, we're 90 days away. I will be able, Caroline will be able to tell her message, and I will be able to be out, you know, in San Antonio, Laredo, on airwaves, talking about my message and why I am running for Congress and why I am a better way forward and how we are going to do this together to flip a district that's been Democrat controlled for 110 years. And we're going to flip it red, and we are going to make history. And I will be the first Latina to ever represent Congressional District 28.
Now, Abraham, as we wrap up, I think, you know, going back to the Gang of 8 years and the Republican autopsy in 2012, it was sort of conventional wisdom that in order to make gains with Latino voters, the Republican Party needed to moderate, to liberalize its position on immigration. And so a lot of Republican voters and, you know, voters in general, maybe independent voters, might be turned off by the idea of the Republican Party, you know, changing to court Hispanic voters, because they've heard that means liberalizing. And maybe there's truth to that. I don't know. It does that. Are those two the same thing? I don't think so. Personally, I think, you know, common sense border policies are popular with voters in general. It's certainly not the Democrats' border policies. But how can, you know, Republicans in 2022, the same Republican Party that put out the silly autopsy of 2012, how can they fail to capitalize on the inroads they've made in the Trump years?
Yeah, so I think the very first thing is to acknowledge that border security and immigration reform can be two separate conversations, right? I think everyone might have a different of opinion on how we get to immigration reform or what that looks like for America. But I think we all understand that our immigration system is very broken. But the majority of Americans, if not almost all Americans, understand the need for a secure border, right? So while we must have a debate and separate conversation on what immigration reform looks like for America, something that we must stay true and honest and congruent to our message is the fact that we need a strong and secure border. And I mean, the majority of Border Patrol agents are Hispanics, right? So providing resources for our overworked, tired patrol agents is something that doesn't need to be a political issue. It's something that should be bipartisan. We should want to secure a border. We should want to protect our the men and women who, you know, every single day are risking their lives going out there and doing the dangerous work, right? So I think the Republican Party and Republican candidates can have the two separate conversations with their constituents and have those kind of viewpoints. But look, I think that, you know, there's a large talk about this red wave that's coming in November. I think it's very true. I think we need to be very excited about that, work hard for that. But we shouldn't forget the Latino wave as well that's coming in November. The amount of Latinas who are running for office, down ballot, school board, city council, county judge, even on the federal side, Congress, right? That says something. That says that Latinas are, and I talked to a lot of these candidates who are running, and they say that they're doing it because of their children. They want to leave an America that their children have a fighting chance of opportunity and security in this nation, right? So while the Democrats might win the Latinx vote, which is fine because it's like, what, a handful of voters across America, I think that you're going to get the Republicans winning over the Latino vote because they are provided resources behind amazing candidates like Cassie and Caroline who are really embracing free markets, entrepreneurship, security, education, and immigration reform in their communities. And I'm excited for that. But I think, you know, to really nail down that question, is Republicans would do great in acknowledging that immigration reform might be a broader conversation and maybe something that each state should look at differently. But border security is something that we need as of yesterday. And it is something that everyone should acknowledge that is a bipartisan issue.
Well, Cassie, Carolina, and Abraham, thank you so much for joining this edition of Federalist Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Emily.
Of course, absolutely. And we'll follow the story closely and follow these trends closely throughout the rest of the year and into the future. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at The Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.